It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 52nd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have an interesting interview with Saitama, creator of wonderful things including Cancer Town and Indifference Engine and Slaughterman's Creed. Very different comics than the usual fare. And I think you'll enjoy what he has to say about his newest project, White Knuckle. Then I review this week's comics, and I introduce a new segment called Beyond Comics, in which I talk about the DC Nation versus Marvel Universe battle taking place on weekend mornings. After that, we get to news and previews with Ian Cullen and Gianluca Glazer, and I wrap everything up with a look inside the local comic store. We got a lot to do, so let's get started. Okay, I want to welcome back to the podcast Saitama, creator of such interesting books as Indifference Engine and Slaughterman's Creed, among other good things. How are you doing today, Sai?
Not too bad, thanks.
Let's start off right with a new project, White Knuckle, this time. I got a chance to read a preview copy of it, and it's very interesting, a very different book. Do you want to talk a little bit about what the inspiration is and what the book's about?
Well, sure. Directly, the inspiration came from a guy that I saw on the London Underground one time. I was just traveling around London on the tube there, and I found myself sitting opposite this guy in his 70s, just sort of sitting there looking horribly haunted. And staring, as I was sort of spying on him as surreptitious as I could, just staring in growing horror, it seemed to me, at his own hands. And I shared basically a 4 or 5 stop ride with this guy, this random stranger. And by the end of it, I had a story about him in mind that I knew I was eventually going to have to put down on paper. What emerged from that really, as White Knuckle begins, 40 years ago, Seth Regal was a monster, a serial strangler with a string of horrific crimes stretching 10 years to his name, and had evaded justice. But now at nearly 70 and tormented by this lifetime of horror, he's living on the verge of poverty and basically just waiting for death. And the thing is that he's horribly tortured because throughout his entire adventures in serial killing, he was possessed of the delusion that he was acting in some way as an agent of mercy. And this delusion was stripped from him forcibly when, while sort of executing what turned out to be his final victim, he was interrupted in the act by the victim's daughter at 10 years old. And suddenly he saw himself through her eyes, and it destroyed his entire worldview, his entire view of his place in that world. And so at 70 now, he finds himself unconsciously stalking this girl who, in a sense, stole his life and, in a sense, opened his eyes. And he's circling in on her, falling back into these odd behavior patterns until he accidentally finds himself in a position where he sort of inadvertently saves her son's life. Now, suddenly, this professional recluse, this horribly withdrawn, horribly tormented old man, suddenly finds that he's become somewhat of a local celebrity, and old wounds get opened and the bodies won't stay buried any longer. And this whole thing just fell out of the sky on me as I was sharing this tube ride with a poor arthritic old guy that I've horribly abused in this story.
Well, it's interesting because oftentimes if you're riding on like the bus or something like that and you see people, you have to wonder what kind of experiences they've gone through. And you're filling in the gaps on what probably is an interesting story for some people to ride along with somebody who looks like that. You kind of wonder the way that they act and stuff, did something alter them or make them different? And that's kind of the way that this story unfolds. We actually get to see, and he's called the Gripper instead of the Ripper, which I kind of was interesting. I like that. And the interesting thing to me is we get to see things from his perspective, and it's not a pretty picture. But the part that really gets to me is when he runs into somebody who he calls himself a fan of the Gripper. That just as when he runs into the young boy, when he runs into the fan, that also alters his life. I just found that really interesting.
I think it's nature of people with extreme characteristics or extreme backstories, they do affect everybody who comes into contact with them. They, in a sense, contaminate everything around them. So, yeah, in as much as he's the victim of his own insanity and these dreadful killer hands of his, what I was hoping was if we could continually see things through his perspective and not really deviate too far from his interpretations of things, we'd be able to see how he's affecting everyone around him without needing to be massively explicit on that, and hopefully let him just seep out into the environment and see how all these people's lives have been changed through either meeting him or simply knowing that he's out there somewhere. So you mentioned the fan. This is a guy who'd never actually encountered him, but had been fascinated by this guy and had pieced together in his own mind a backstory for him in much the same way as I did with the arthritic old guy on the train.
So are you the fan? Is that what's going on?
No, I would hope not.
The story's really gripping because you never know who you're riding with. If you watch any of these murder mystery shows these days, and there certainly seem to be a lot more of them than there used to be, you have to look at other people in a different way. And I think that's what this book does. This shows just how bad things could be for other people. We're living our quote-unquote normal, happy lives, and the person that we're sitting across might be something that we might not want to run into.
Yeah, I mean, a basic thing drives quite a lot of my writing, I guess, is that not everybody who has a bad experience in their childhood puts on a bat costume and fights crime. Sometimes their reactions are going to be less extreme but more profound than we'll often see in this kind of medium.
I was also fascinated by the fact that Seth actually has got the capacity for both good and bad. He saves the boy. Now, granted, it was something of an accident, but there is still within him the potential for good. It just may not be that he realizes it as much as he realizes what terrible things have happened.
Hopefully it's something that I've tried to put in as an essential core of the character, because if you can actually write a story about someone this horrible, who has the scale of his crimes being so unfathomable, but actually make him a figure of sympathy in a way, if you can work that into the heart of the story, then, well, I mean, hell, that's a story I think that is probably worth telling. Because I write villain books. At the moment, that seems to be where most of my energy has gone, in writing stories about bad guys. And I've always had the idea that a villain in his own mind would always be the hero of his own story. So I wanted to deny that to the character in this book. I wanted to have a guy whose eyes had been opened, who had seen himself as this hero, as this agent of mercy, as the great, I mean, he refers to himself as a guardian angel at one point. And to have had that illusion stripped away, and to find out that he was the bad guy all along, he was the monster, and there was no one left to stop him. Because he'd been so successful at it, there was no one left who could end his story. And so he's searching for an end to his own story here.
Now, the thing I've got to ask, of course, is why is it called White Knuckle? Is it because of the tension in the story? Is that why it's called that?
Yeah, it's all about the grip, the fact that he's almost at the mercy of these. If you see, and Valya's done a great job with the physical performance that she's given to him, that he's reached the point now where he considers his hands to be an enemy, that he's almost shifting the blame for what he's done onto them. And he's constantly, if you see him, he's, while his body language is very internalized, he's constantly gripping and squeezing his hands, and he's gripping the guardrail at the theme park, and people are often looking at him and saying, are your hands cold because you're always clutching them? So the white knuckle is all about the grip, and the grip that he has over, in a broader sense, over everybody who comes into contact with him.
It's interesting because the very first time we see him, he's rubbing his hands. Right from the very beginning, he's watching the young boys fuss with each other, but he's doing that, obviously, at that time. So it's interesting that the first thing we see is that's what he's up to right at the start.
So much of the characterization in comics, it comes through from the artwork, the physical performance that is given to them by the artist. I can give direction. I can say, we want him to be doing this thing, but ultimately, it's the artist's responsibility to create the performance. And this is why I think Valya has done such a staggering job on this, because she has such a haunting art style. And I knew this was going to be a downbeat book. It's not a big glam-bam action thing, because it's a story without a hero. There is no equal and opposing force to meet the gripper. It's just him coming to terms with himself, essentially. And it was always going to be somber. And the style that Valya has is magical, because we've got a lot of sort of hallucinations and things. And she blends it all in so beautifully. So yeah, I had absolutely fantastic time working with her on this.
It's really interesting because the way that she's doing things in the coloring, for example, is very different. From page to page, sometimes it has almost realistic-looking colors, and then sometimes it's a very dark brown, and on another page it'll be a bright red, and sometimes it's purplish, and so you're never quite sure when you turn the page where you're going to be on the next page.
Right, well, there are embedded flashbacks. We're going forwards and backwards in time 30 or 40 years. Mm-hmm. In various points, and we're drifting into Regal's perspective and the things that he's manufacturing from his own mind and trying to layer everything on top. And then at the end of it again, stripping it away. So you're essentially just left with a tired old man and the horror of his own hands.
Mm-hmm. I always get a kick because whenever he sees somebody and their appearance alters in his mind, obviously, his perception of them, they're always saying the words, "Release me."
Mm.
Which is kind of an interesting thing. It's almost like as if he's not responsible. They're begging him to do this.
Again, it's his interpretation because every time this happens, pretty much, we'll then get a little flash of what's happening in the real world, what's happening outside of his brain, and that release becomes, let me go.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, get off me. And it's just he gets so channeled at that point that anything that you would say to him at that point would come as a plea for mercy, which he, in his monster state, is interpreting as a vindication of what he's doing to you.
Mm-hmm.
We see him in the throes of that, in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, you see those same drives, those same illusions coming back to haunt him, except he knows what they are now. They're still so hard to rebel against.
Mm-hmm.
But he's had the blindfold taken off, and you see him now, again, trying to come to terms with what he was and what he's one step from becoming again at any time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to spoil the ending, but it has a really interesting end that I liked real well. And I have to say, when I read your stuff, there's nightmares that are going to happen. And I can be sure I'm going to have some nightmares about this one because it's all about evil and what evil is and how close evil can be. And we sometimes don't even know it's there. So it's very good. I really like it. I think it's excellent. Now, White Knuckle, this is obviously from Mark Hosier.
Yeah.
Is this going to be a graphic novel? Is this going to come out in individual issues? How's this going to work?
It's coming out as a trade straight away.
Okay.
I believe it's then going to be serialized digitally. They usually do that.
Ah.
It'll be out, 12th of May. The launch is going to be at the Bristol Convention here.
Oh, great. Will it be available in the States eventually? Will it come through Diamond?
Yeah, it's coming out through Diamond. The easiest and cheapest way to get hold of it is probably to contact me directly, either through my blog at raggedman.com or website, sodazon.com, because they were doing a pre-order special price of £10 instead of £11.99. £11.99 was the convention price, £12.99 is the full retail price. And because of the way the whole business end of it is worked out, we can sell it directly at £10. So it's actually a little cheaper.
Okay. Now, as far as your previous projects, have all those come out in trade format now? I think Indifference Engine has. I think Slaughterman's Creed has. Other ones?
Yeah, everything since Starship Troopers has, yeah. So, yeah, Cancer Town, Slaughterman's Creed, Indifference Engine. I did the text for the broadcast Henry Flint art book.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I work mostly through Mark Hosier, and they work largely in trade.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Now, as far as if somebody wants to order through the local shop, can they do that? Or is it better just to contact you or try to go through Mark Hosier?
It is out through Diamond, so I guess they can. Yeah, but as I say, the easiest way is probably just to go through us directly. So,
mm-hmm. Is this going to be like through Amazon as well, or how's this going to work?
Yeah, Amazon usually get it. So, actually, no, there is a listing for it on Amazon already. So, yes, as soon as the stock becomes available, Amazon's a good option.
So I need to look for White Knuckle when I get out to Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Okay, now, any other projects you're working on that we should know about?
Oh, yeah. Well, the next big one for me is, there's the Bayou Arcana anthology, which Nick Wilkinson and I have a story in. That's also going to be out. That's a sort of a swamp horror anthology, mm-hmm. masterminded by a guy called James Pearson.
Mm-hmm.
And that's out at Bristol as well. The next big standalone from me is going to be Cancer Town 2, second volume, Blasphemous Tumors, which is out in October, November, with art by Graham Howard, who is just astounding.
I'm so looking forward to that because I like the first one a lot. It was really off-center stuff, and you know I love variety in my reading. And so that one, that disturbed me for a long time, so I guess I should expect the same from number two.
Yeah, you might say Cancer Town 2 is going to be a little less timid, a little less conservative and conformist than the first one.
Goodness. Oh, my goodness.
But the thing is, when it's your first book, the strength is that you don't know what you're not allowed to get away with.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second one, you have the first one say, well, that was our baseline.
Mm-hmm.
What can we get away with this time?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about that one because it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, that'll be good. I really love the first one, so I'm going to be fascinated to see what you do in the second one. I really am. Anything else that we should know about?
Wow. Well, let's see. Work on the artwork for my new paranormal Cold War astral projecting remote viewing assassin book, Phantom Lung and the Garden of Dead Liars, is kicking off at the moment. That's going to be a little way out. Just yet, but that one's on the horizon. I've got a ton of other things that I can't quite talk about just yet.
Okay. Well, we'll get to talk with you again in the future. Hopefully you can tell us some of that stuff when the time comes.
Outstanding.
If somebody wants to get something that's different, that's not your standard comic, I would recommend that they pick up your books.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully, Cy, we'll talk to you again real soon.
Great stuff. Thanks a lot. Okay.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Okay, it's time for me to review the latest comics. The book of the week for me, of course, is something that I talked with J.T. Kroll about several podcasts ago, Batman Beyond Unlimited number 3, which starts his Superman Beyond story. And we talked a lot about Superman and the future of Superman, if he can outlive all of the people that he knows on Earth. What's the Earth going to be like for him? What's his role going to be? And this book explores a lot of those issues. This is the first part of a multi-part story, and it's very, very well done. The artwork is great by Howard Porter, and Mr. Kroll knows how to weave an interesting story. In fact, this is one of the better Superman stories I've read in a long time. What do you do with somebody who's as moral and as powerful as Superman is? Very difficult to figure that out. We do get to see some of Lex Luthor's tendrils reaching into the future just as much as the Joker's tendrils did back in Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, a direct-to-DVD movie which I still adore. It's a good book, it's really well written, it's very thought-provoking, and it's very emotional at times, so I really liked it. Be sure to get Batman Beyond Unlimited number 3. Now for some New 52 reviews. Batman number 8 continues to be one of the best books that's out on the stands today. The Court of Owls storyline is just going to be a classic one that's going to live on for decades, I think. I love Batman continuing to fly this high, so kudos to Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. Next, I enjoyed Nightwing, which follows in on some of that storyline. Kyle Higgins has Dick Grayson facing his family's past. Then Birds of Prey has a lot of interesting story developments, followed by Green Lantern Corps number 8 by Peter Tomasi, as we discover that the Alpha Lanterns have their own oath, which I kind of liked. Wonder Woman continues to delve into the gods of myth and continues to weave a great story. Captain Atom has a very interesting sci-fi perspective that I liked. Supergirl is drawn by my all-time favorite artist, George Perez, which is really cool. Red Hood and the Outlaws was once again better than I expected, so I like that. Catwoman number 8 sees her working with her new team, if you want to call them that. Legion of Superheroes continues to peer into the future of DC and its New 52. Blue Beetle puts his friend in a life-threatening situation, and aliens are after his armor. DC Comics Presents shows the conclusion of the Challenges of the Unknown first tale. It was pretty good. I liked it. Other books worth picking up this week included Batman Odyssey, Volume 2, Number 7 of 7, the first of several books that are concluding a miniseries, Thunder Agents, Volume 2, Number 6 of 6, and Young Justice, Number 15. Those all came from DC. Marvel has Venom, Number 16, the fun book Steed and Mrs. Peel, Number 4 of 6, and Planet of the Apes, Number 13, come from Boom. Manhattan Projects, Number 2, which is creepy as can be, and Near Death come from Image. Rocketeer Adventures 2, Number 2 of 4 from IDW is great, as well as Green Hornet number 21 from Dynamite. And those are the books that came out this week.
What are you doing for Memorial Day weekend this year?
I've got the best working vacation planned ever.
I'll be sitting on a panel talking about social media promotion.
I am hanging out with my friends from all over the country and even across the globe.
I'm hitting up several of the writing panels, anything that involves superpowers, but also that gritty sci-fi thriller vibe.
I am going to be hanging out with the largest collection of podcasters in America.
I'm probably going to kill someone.
Sigler! No! Bad author! Bad!
There will be at least one writing morning at the nearby Panera. I hear it's where all of the cool folks go for coffee.
I am spreading myself far too thin and going on both a podcasting track and the literary track.
So, where am I spending this amazing weekend?
At Balticon.
I'm going to 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 Balticon.
shouldn't you be going too? That's Balticon, the Maryland Regional Science Fiction and Fantasy Convention, held Memorial Day weekend each year. For more information, go to balticon.org.
Welcome to a new occasional segment I'm calling Beyond Comics. The line between comics and movies and television and the like continues to really blur, and since we've got a lot of comic-related things coming out in the next couple of months, I thought it'd be a good idea for me to start reviewing and talking about those kinds of things. The first thing I want to talk about, of course, is the battle between DC and Marvel on Saturday and Sunday mornings. There is what's called the DC Nation block of programming for an hour. There's also Marvel Universe on Disney XD. That's on Sunday morning. That runs for more than an hour, usually about an hour and 15 minutes. They're very interesting. There's a lot of similarities between them, but there's also a lot of differences. I happen to like some more than others, so I'll give you my ideas as to what I like and what I don't. The thing that I really enjoy about the DC Nation one is the fact that we've got Green Lantern, which is a terrific show, and also Young Justice. And if you noticed, I started this segment out with the long theme of Young Justice, which they don't run anymore because it's part of a bigger block. And I always miss when theme music goes away like that, so I'm playing that in memory of the good old days when I used to be able to listen to this. Young Justice recently concluded its first season, and based on the first season, I would highly recommend this show. The episode that aired this past Saturday was fantastic. It summed up the entire season. A lot of seeds have been planted and been growing the whole year long, and it's been really great. We've seen the group come together at the very beginning. We've discovered Superboy and his powers. We've also seen coupling happen amongst the group as the years progressed. Superboy and Miss Martian. We've seen Kid Flash and Arrowette, and even Zatanna has kind of taken a shine to the younger Robin. We've seen several of the Justice League come along, and clearly this show is tied in to the DVDs that tell stories direct to the stores. The Justice League looks very similar to the way that they do on the DVDs, and I kind of like it. This really does belong in that universe. Also, add to the fact that Bruce Greenwood does the voice of Batman, and he does a very nice job of it. There's one interesting development that I have to point out, and I'm going to play a little audio here for you. When the group first meets and they have done their best and Batman is chiding them at the end of the very first adventure, he says this.
End results aside, we are not happy. You hacked Justice League systems, disobeyed direct orders, and endangered lives. You will not be doing this again.
Well, now that things have come to a conclusion along the way, he has a different tone when he talks to the Young Justice group.
Tell me if this sounds familiar. You hacked League systems, disobeyed protocol, and endangered your lives. And your initiative resulted in the capture of three escaped felons, proving Warden Strange runs Bell Rev as a cover for criminal activity. Well done.
You can see there's been progress during the year, and that's kind of a good thing. I like the fact that the show has had a lot of growing in the characters and a lot of changes. One of the things I really enjoyed was Superboy getting from Lex Luthor those patches that were in the shape of the S symbol that would suppress his human DNA and allow him to be able to access his Kryptonian DNA a lot stronger and thus get more of the superpowers that Superman's known for. That was a cool thing. But the interesting thing to me, too, was that when we come to the season finale, who better for Young Justice to take on than the Justice League? And I don't want to spoil much, but let's just say it's a very interesting battle. We actually get to see the climax when Robin takes on Batman and Superboy takes on Superman. Just great stuff. The finale ends up very well. I just think that the story is really good. They've wrapped up several plot lines and sown a few seeds for next year. So if you haven't seen Young Justice, don't watch the finale until you've seen all the other episodes, because it won't mean a whole lot to you. There's just a lot going on. Great stuff. The one I like second, of course, is Green Lantern, the animated series. I've had the chance to interview Josh Keaton about his role as Hal Jordan, and also talked to Frederick Wiedemann about the score. The music continues to be fantastic, and I can understand why it's been nominated for an Annie. It's a very good score, very movie-like. Even though you're watching it for half an hour, it feels like you're watching a movie. The thing that people probably don't like about it is the fact that it's CGI, but it's not at the Pixar level. It's kind of back when Pixar first started. So there's a little rough around the edges to it, but it's still pretty good. I think every week it gets better and better. And of course, being out in space is a good thing because aliens and machines do much better in CGI than humans do. Probably the clunkiest looking one of the bunch is Hal Jordan, but he still doesn't look too bad. So Green Lantern is a very good storytelling vehicle. It's got good sci-fi stories, lots of interesting characters. Razor's turned out to be quite a nice surprise. I like him a lot. So Green Lantern, the animated series, I like. Other things that happened during DC Nation was we get DC shorts. And they're hit and miss sometimes. I kind of like the new Teen Titans, as they like to call them, in which the original voices of the Teen Titans from the animated series and Cartoon Network come back. They do a nice job on that, but they're much more in the anime style than they were in the real life style. Then, too, we also get a lot of them, like a baby who turns into Superman in Japan. On that one. But I also liked some of the ones where the female heroes, Batgirl and Wonder Woman and Supergirl, team up. Plastic Man's got a good thing going, and also Animal Man has some interesting stuff. So overall, I really like DC Nation. I'm going to be fascinated to see what goes on. The thing that's interesting to me, too, as I mentioned, the second season's going to start up this Saturday for Young Justice, so don't miss it. Everybody thinks that it's not going to be continuing on, and even my TiVo doesn't think it's going to be there, but according to ZapToIt.com, it's going to be there. So that's my impression of DC Nation. Marvel Universe, of course, is on Disney XD, and it runs on Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock after, oddly enough, the DC Nation rerun happens at 10 o'clock on Cartoon Network. They rerun it again on Sunday evenings, which is good in case people who are adults want to watch it who didn't get to see it in the morning. I like Avengers much better, although I have to say they're dragging in a lot of heroes besides the Avengers, and that's usually a sign to me that they don't know what to do with the characters, and I hope that's not the case. The animation is good, but a little blocky. I can't stand the Wasp's costume, but then I never have liked her costume. She's had terrible costumes ever since her origin back in the 60s. She's got what looks like a pair of headphones on her here. How she can hear anything through those, I can't figure out. So the story's interesting. They've got the Skrull Kree War going on with Secret Invasion as part of it. Captain America's been replaced by a Skrull at this point. There are a lot of interesting things happening. I'm just not sure that it has the depth of feeling that Young Justice or Green Lantern has. It's much more straightforward storytelling, where I prefer a little more of the bob and weave of the DC group. So it depends. A younger viewer probably would like Avengers more than the others, but it's just not a bad show, so I would not give up on it. The one I like the least is Ultimate Spider-Man, which I always feel should be Spider-Man and his almost avenging friends. The whole purpose of this show is not about Spider-Man. It's about the fact that Spider-Man has been taken into S.H.I.E.L.D. as part of a young heroes team that's being trained. He gets the chance to work with Nova and White Tiger and Power Man and Iron Fist and all these good characters. And it's interesting. It's way too comedic for my taste, though. And there's a lot of Teen Titans influence on it. You see the Japanese anime big head things appear every once in a while. The action is different, and I guess what they're trying to do is just differentiate it from Avengers by having it be a lot more comedic. But it just doesn't fly for me. And I know Paul Dini's involved with it, and I usually like all of his stuff. And there are funny moments, but overall, this is the one that I like the least. Other things that are part of the Marvel Universe are a mashups series that takes place over the end credits, which they take old cartoons a la Space Ghost Coast to Coast and try to make them funny. And I have to be honest with you, they have not made me laugh once. Been pretty kind of silly. Older cartoons, some people took very seriously, and so ridiculing them in this way, I think, is a mistake. Then we get Marvel Masterworks part with Joe Quesada so far. He's been the only one, and he kind of shows people how to draw some of the characters, and he talks about the character's history as well. I'd like to see some other people besides Joe Quesada do it. In fact, it looks to me like they've already rerun one of them. We had Captain America 2 weeks in a row. Another segment that happens is the guy who's the host of Marvel Universe gets to interact with real life people as they do different things, sort of as homages to the Marvel characters. You get to see a Captain America shield being built out of aluminum in 1 week. You get to see people doing jumps and flips like Captain America does as well. So they're trying to ground all this stuff in reality, which is fine. I don't find those things all that interesting. I'm not sure I'm much of an athlete, so maybe if I was, it would appeal to me more. But that's kind of where I stand on that. In upcoming episodes, as they happen, I'm going to review the Avengers movie, the Dark Knight Rises film, and other things that have to do with comics. So be sure to tune in future episodes of Beyond Comics. Okay, time for this week's news and previews, and with me as always is Ian Cullen. How are you, Ian?
I'm very well, thank you.
And Gianluca Glazer, how about you, Gianluca?
I'm doing all right.
Okay, starting off with the news. Ian, what news do you have for us this week?
I've got a little bit of news, not really got too much because it's mostly reviews that we got up at the moment on the Sci-Fi Post. But in terms of news, Ultimate Captain America comic is not going to return, apparently. Despite the upcoming Avengers film shining a light on the character, the Ultimate Captain America will not be revived by Marvel Comics, according to ICV2, whatever that is. Rumours were circulating that the company had said during Diamond Retailing Summit indicated the character would be back in a new ongoing book. The character's not coming back, but he's not going away forever either. An unspecified Ultimate Comics title will have Cap in it this summer as part of a plotline that is expected to gain mainstream media attention. You know, but the question is, will he die again?
Probably.
But it says also here at the bottom, it says, for those who came in late, the Ultimate version of Captain America was created by Mark Miller and Brian Hitch, yada, 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 in 2002. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, the interesting thing was that he resigned being Captain America in the Ultimate line because of the death of Peter Parker over there. So he hasn't been seen, apparently, in those books since then.
Here's another bit of news. This is more geared towards the Avengers movie. I just posted this myself about an hour ago. But apparently the Avengers, it's actually come out tops on a Fandango survey for the most anticipated summer movies. It's recently topped Fandango survey of most anticipated summer movies for men, and its only competition seems to be Batman The Dark Knight Rises. But if recent reports about the movie being pegged to potentially top $150 million for its opening weekend or anything to go by, The Dark Knight is probably going to have to rise a little earlier. The survey, which was conducted by Fandango, which is a movie ticketing information site, names Avengers as the most anticipated movie of the summer. According to the survey, 31% of men and 16% of women put the Avengers down as their top choice of movies to go see in the summer. It was the most anticipated movie among men. The Christian Stewart star of Snow White and The Huntsman edged out Avengers 22% to 16% to the top of the women's list. The men's list is as follows. At number one is Avengers with 31% of the vote for men. At number two, Dark Knight Rises with 23% of the vote. Number three, The Bourne Legacy has 14%. Men in Black has 3.8% at number four. And Prometheus has 7% at number five. I'm quite surprised that Prometheus doesn't have more there, to be honest. The women's pick for most anticipated summer movie is in order. At number one, Snow White and the Huntsman at 22%. The Avengers at number two at 16%. Men in Black at number three at 13%. The Dark Knight Rises only got 10%. That's at number four spot. And Dark Shadows came in at number five with only 8%.
Interesting. I don't know. See, Avengers is going to be the first of the movies that's going to come out. So I imagine the presence of mind is for that. Amazing Spider-Man in any of that?
No, it's not even listed.
That's interesting.
Wow.
But they only listed the top five movies for both men and women.
Okay, Gianluca, how about you?
Yeah, I have some news. IDW is doing Judge Dredd comic book now. They're doing that. They have Zach Howard and Nelson Daniel attached to do that. Archie has been doing interesting things, you know, we talked about them last week and doing another comic book of Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken on the Occupy movement. Now this time they're trying something kind of really almost in the realm of science fiction. They're going to do a gender swap issue of Archie comics where Archie is a female and Betty and Veronica are guys, both vying for Archie.
So, oh.
Interesting stuff there. Yes.
Okay. I think we're getting a little desperate over at Archie Comics, I have to say. Now, is Archie still going to be called Archie? Is
it gonna be a female? Like Archina or something like that.
Archie.
Veronica is going to be Ronnie, and I can't remember what name they gave Betty, but yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Adventure Time for Boom Studios has been a big hit, and they're doing a spinoff, I believe in July, called Marceline and the Scream Queens. It's going to be a four-issue miniseries. So they'll probably have announcements of sellouts and stuff like that. So be on the lookout for that.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, we had the C2E2 convention in Chicago. A lot of publishers were there making announcements. IDW said that they were going to be streamlining their license titles. Instead of having multiple ongoing series and stuff like that, they're going to just have one ongoing series for each of their, you know, the Transformers, the G.I. Joe, things of that nature. And then, they're going to have one or two miniseries for that title as well. So instead of having all these titles, they're streamlining it.
Well, they probably learned something from Dynamite and Green Hornet, because they ran Green Hornet into the ground. I mean, they have eight or ten titles, and people get exhaustion after a while. I wonder if the same thing's going to happen to Avengers versus X-Men, but we'll find that out.
We'll see. Arkea is doing a digital-first deal with Comixology, and they're going to be actually releasing digital versions of some of their books, and then like a month, I believe, before the print hits the stands. So that's an interesting experiment. I wonder how that's going to work. They're a different company than most, though. They don't release a lot of serial books. They release more trades or graphic novels.
Yeah, last week when I talked to David Peterson, he talked about the fact that they were releasing a hardcover on Free Comic Book Day because that represents more of who they are. They see themselves more as a graphic novel kind of a place. So that's why they're doing it.
Yeah, and that's a great idea, by the way, too.
Oh, can't wait.
Yeah. Dark Horse Comics announced at C2E2 that they're doing two spin-offs for Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They're both going to be miniseries. One's going to feature the character Spike, and the other one's going to feature Willow. So they'll be announcing that probably in preview soon. And then you're going to like this, Wayne. Oni Press is going to be releasing a new Stumptown miniseries from Greg Rucka and artist Matthew Southworth in August.
Good. Yeah.
So they already have a name for it, The Case of the Baby in the Velvet Case. So that starts in August.
Yeah, that first series was really good at that. Mr. Rucka can turn out a good story, I have to say. I've always enjoyed his stuff. He was heavily involved in Gotham Central back in the day. That was one of my favorite books. Okay, and Ian, why don't we go ahead and get to you as far as things that maybe we should be looking out for that are coming up on the 25th of April.
Oh, well, I'm looking at IDW's books right now, and Star Trek issue 8 is due out this week with the Photograph variant cover, and there's also going to be a Tim Bradsheet Regginger cover and a Tim Bradsheet sketch variant cover coming out for that this week. But one that's really caught my eye is, this is an issue number one, by the way, they're actually doing Popeye, as in Popeye the Sailor Man.
Yeah. And doesn't that cover look familiar to you?
It does, actually. It looks like the original Matt Smasher cartoon design.
Well, it also looks like a cover of Superman. Superman, he was on Action Head. He was holding up a car. And I think that this is resembling that. Of course, I think that's on purpose. They're trying to grab people's attention with it. So that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I'm surprised they're not releasing it through iPhone and giving out the iPhone app. Coming soon, Popeye. I used to love Popeye when I was a kid. I even went to see that really crappy Robin Williams movie.
Oh, yeah. Robert Altman directed that.
It was horrible. I used to watch the cartoons. I even like the old Matt Smasher cartoons of Popeye. Even like those ones. Always a good, fun character to watch. I don't know whether I'll be getting the comic. If they release it to trade, I might get a trade paperback of the first few issues. Just for the sake of having something like that. But that comes out this week. Dark Horse has quite a few Star Wars titles out this week. You've got Star Wars Blood Ties, Boba Fett is Dead, issue 1 of 4. You've got two covers of that coming out. You've got Chris Scarf Regan cover. You've got the David Palumbo variant cover. And then you have Star Wars Crimson Empire 3, Empire Lost, issue 6 of 6 coming out. And Star Wars Dark Times Out of the Wilderness, issue 5 of 5. And the reason I'm mentioning all these Star Wars titles is because I'm pretty sure that one of our writers, Patrick Hayes, is probably going to review at least one of those titles as and when they come out.
Before we leave you, Ian, there's one other book I think you're going to want to know about, and that's Merciless, The Rise of Ming, number 1 from Dynamite. I think that's going to be related to the Flash Gordon zeitgeist.
Yeah, I'm not getting it.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
I'm not getting it because basically I'd rather just stick to Flash Gordon's zeitgeist.
Okay.
I'm not interested in how Ming came to power because I've already read a version of how Ming came to power in the other Flash Gordon comic, and I'd rather just stick to the zeitgeist. So another thing about Ming's rise to power through Dynamite, it's just sort of basically copying what the other company came. I've read a variation of that story already. I don't need another one. And, you know, I'd rather save money and put it towards something else.
Okay. All right, Gianluca, then how about you? What are you looking forward to on the 25th?
Sure. I wanted to mention on Popeye number one, it's being written by Roger Langridge, who does Snarked for Boom Studios, and he also did the Great Muppet run that he both wrote and drew. So definitely looking forward to that. He seems to be a very hot writer right now. Mm-hmm. On DC side, they have I, Vampire number 8 and Justice League Dark number 8, and both of those stories are intertwined right now. Mm-hmm. We already mentioned Merciless, The Rise of Ming number 1, which is a prequel to the current Flash Gordon series. Mm-hmm. The only other thing that kind of sticks out with me is Image Comics has Bulletproof Coffin Disinterred number 4 from David Hein and Shaky Kane, and it's definitely a very interesting comic if you ever read it. Mm-hmm. Probably like nothing I've ever read.
What's the basic storyline?
It's just really weird. It is. I read issue 1 and I couldn't really tell you what happens other than kind of this cop kind of goes crazy and kills its partner, but that really doesn't do justice. It's very hallucinatory, very underground looking, the book. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this guy just is basically hallucinating the whole time. And wow. I believe each issue is kind of like a self-contained story. It's a 6-issue miniseries and some interesting characters. Shaky Kane has a really underground kind of style.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, let me run down a bunch just because I feel the need to.
Sure.
All-Star Western, number 8. Then the book that Geoff Johns pointed out now actually sells more than X-Men and most of the Avengers, Aquaman, number 8, is coming out. Batman Beyond Unlimited, the second printing of number 2. Then we've got the Black Orchid hardcover. I think that character is going to start showing up in Justice League Dark before long, which is why they're reviving that.
Did you say the second printing of number 2?
Yes.
I'm going to have to ring my comic store because I missed a trick there.
Okay. Blackhawks concludes. The Flash, number 8, goes on. Fury of Firestorm, the Nuclear Man. Then we get the Gotham Central, so speaking of Gotham Central, Volume 4 Corrigan trade paperback. They've issued that in hardcover, which is why I won't be getting the trade. But if you want to read good stories based on somebody else besides the heroes of Gotham, you can get a chance to look at that. Green Lantern, New Guardians, number 8. Savage Hawkman, now done by Rob Liefeld, is out. Stormwatch Volume 1 hardcover for $30 is out. I don't think this is the current run. I think it's the previous run. Superman number 8 with Ivan Reis and Joe Prado, black and white covers. All kinds of other good things like that. Teen Titans number 8 and Voodoo number 8, which I really like. When we get to Dynamite, George R.R. Martin's A Game of Thrones number 7 is continuing on. Green Hornet number 24 and Warlord of Mars, I've always got to mention that. Number 17 comes out. Be sure to get this book. That is a great, great book by Arvid Nelson. I really like it.
Cool.
IDW has Doctor Who Classic Series 4, number 3 of 6. The numbering on that always confuses me. Memorial number 5 of 6 is out, which is a good one. Monocyte number 4. You talk about an underground book. This is a really good underground feel book. You've got these godlike characters that all look sort of interesting and different. They've even made a soundtrack that you can listen to the music while you're reading it, so that's pretty cool. I like that. Teenage Turtles is coming out. That's number 9. So that's kind of cool. Image has a couple of interesting things. Chew Volume 5, Major League Chew trade paperback is out. They've also got Hack Slash, which a lot of people like. A little depressed, boy. Some people really tend to go for it. Doesn't have to be my cup of tea, but why not? Then we get over into the Marvel books. Marvel's got Avengers vs. X-Men number 1. I think that is their companion title. This is actually called AVX. So it's not Avengers vs. X-Men number 2. The Jim Chung second printing variant covers out that day. Daredevil 11, which has Mark Waid writing it, which I always like. FF number 17, which I expect to go the way of the world before too long because Mr. Hickman's not going to be on it anymore. And then we get to Super Crooks number 2 by Mr. Miller. And we'll see how that does. And I guess the last thing we'll mention is Winter Soldier number 1. They're actually, looks like they're reprinting. Yeah, all three of them, 1 through 3, have come out, and the second printings of all those first 3 issues are going to be out. So if you haven't been reading that, I wasn't terribly impressed by it, but if you like the Bucky Barnes character, that would be one to pick up. I really was kind of thinking they were going to change him, but nope, that is who that is. Anything else that we should talk about before we wrap up?
I noticed you're a fan of Hawkman. Are you looking forward to this new change with Rob Liefeld being involved?
I really liked the Tony Daniel run. I thought that that was a lot of fun. That was a very interesting story. Mr. Liefeld, as interesting as he is and his ability to forget proportion at times, I'm not quite sure how that's going to go. He's famous for that picture of the Enchantress where he must have drawn the legs, but he didn't realize that he was halfway up the page before he realized he's got more than half the body to go, so the top half of her is squashed while the legs are like forever. So Mr. Liefeld is interesting. He's got some interesting drawings of Hawkman. There was one of the cover I think that's kind of fun, but he's going to have to win me over. I'll still buy it, but I really hope this isn't the beginning of the end for Hawkman, because I always enjoy that character. Right. Okay, and on that note, we'll call it quits for another week of news and previews. We'll talk with you guys again soon. It's been a while since I've gotten to go into the local comic store as part of the podcast. There's been so much going on. But let's take a look and see what's new. There are several things that are kind of interesting, including an Alfred E. Newman Wacky Wobbler. Those Wacky Wobblers just continue to sell, although I'll never understand it. There's also an Avengers Readers hardcover Avengers Assemble. There's also an Avengers Readers hardcover World's Mightiest Superhero Team, as well as an Avengers kit that retails for $9.95. It must be some kind of model or something like that. Anyway, there's a Green Hornet Black Beauty, and I always love the Black Beauty. Gorgeous car. One of my favorite things about the Green Hornet series. And so that's very cool. That's out. There is also the novelization of Cabin in the Woods, a recent movie. There's Deadpool Big Head, Deadpool Red T-shirt. A whole bunch of those on all different sizes. There's the Divide DVD. Then Doctor Who stuff galore. There's the 11th Doctor's die-cast Sonic Screwdriver for a paltry $40 in American money. There's also the Sonic Screwdriver flashlight for $12.99. There's also the Blu-ray of Season 6. There's also the Carnival of Monsters DVD and the Dalek flashlight keychain. And it wouldn't be complete without Davros and the Destroyed Daleks action figure set. Then there's also the Doctor Who Flesh Bowl figure creator, which is only $65. Then there's Keeper of the Trakan adventure figure set. There's also Doctor Who Perry and Rogue Cyberman 2-pack of figures. And the Demons DVD. So Doctor Who fans ought to get to the local store as quickly as they can. There's also Hunger Games trading cards based on the current movie. There's James Bond t-shirts that you can get. Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol DVD is finally in the stores. There's MODOK t-shirts from Marvel. There are My Little Pony t-shirts as well. There's Pop Heroes Batgirl vinyl figure offered again. She's only $11, so that's not bad for her. There's Spartacus Legends and Lore trading cards. There's Toon Tumblers, Captain America Clearprint Glass. And there's also a Doctor Doom glass. There is a Marvel X-Men zip-up hoodie. And another zip-up hoodie, as well as Marvel t-shirts. So there's all kinds of X-Men stuff out there. There's Wolverine t-shirts. Don't they come out every week? And the last thing we get, of course, we've got to end up on the zombies. The Zombie Dice 2 for $7.95. So you might want to be sure to stop by and get your zombie dice. I wonder if they fall apart when you roll them. But anyway, those are the things that are in your local comic store this week. And that's a wrap for the 52nd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to be here next week when I talk with Sam Johnson and Mike Gagno about their parody comic, The Almighties, which sounds very familiar if you know what movies are going to be coming out soon. So be sure to be here for that, and we'll have plenty of other surprises going forward and lots of good interviews, so be sure to tune in. But until next time, keep reading your comics.
Jordan of Earth, Green Lantern of Sector 2814. The Viceroy of Demrak 7 claims that when we assigned you to police crucial peace negotiations, you punched him in the face. Is this true?
No, sir. I punched the Viceroy in the stomach. Then I headbutted him in the face. Sir.